The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by Palm Beach Atlantic University, Orlando. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to my program today. We're going to be emphasizing a special need and a couple of people that are in the community that are working to solve this need. That is child abuse prevention. I'm going to be talking in a moment with Glenn Castle from Embrace Families. And then after that, a young lady by the name of Joy Chuba will be here as well. Happy to be on the line today with Glenn Castle. Glenn is with an organization called Embrace Families. Glenn, welcome to The Shepherd.
Thank you so much for having me.
This organization is one of the bigger nonprofits that deal with serving children and protecting kids. And there's not a person that I know that doesn't want that to happen in a more efficient manner, and that's what you're all about. Tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into Embrace.
Well, thank you again for having me on. It really is nice to be able to kind of spread the word about child protection and make sure that people understand that foster care is real. Child protection is real. This isn't something that happens in a far-off land or somewhere where we can close a blind eye. It happens all around us. And so I have had the fortune of working in social services and foster care for my entire professional career. I will admit to you that as a young man coming out of the University of Central Florida, I took my first job in this work because they were willing to hire me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I needed somebody that would give me a paycheck. And so I tripped into this work. I wish that part of the story was something insightful or brilliant, but it really wasn't. It was a place where I could start. It was inside the career path that I had sort of envisioned. And so I started at the state, and I worked there for about 10 years, and I enjoyed my time working in that setting, starting with a long-gone agency called HRS, but then worked at the state through the transition where that agency became the Department of Children and Families.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was kind of in the right spot at the right time when this idea of community-based foster care, community-based care came to be. And it really was an opportunity to return foster care work to the community, which interestingly enough is where foster care began. You know, there's only been three phases of protecting children in the history of our country. And prior to 1900, prior to the Industrial Revolution, children were really viewed as property, and there was not any kind of child protection system. And as America started to develop cities, of course, it was the faith community that first stepped forward. It was the community that stood up and saw children in need, saw children orphaned by maybe parents that couldn't care for them or parents that had died. And the first phase of child protection really was that deep, rich community, especially in and around the faith community, that really began protecting children. Phase two happened about 1950, and that's when the government really got involved in child protection. And there were a lot of other social programs coming about in that time, and child protection was swept up in that net. And for the next 50 years, there really was a move away from the community, and terrible terms like ward of the state emerged. And suddenly we started seeing children that needed help as the government's problem. Well, I've been a part of phase three, which is really an effort to return child protection and foster care to the community. And so the idea of community-based care is you really start to re-engage the community into the protection of children. Now, we have a large government contract, but we are much more about connecting children with our community. and reigniting that mission of faith around a role in helping ensure that the most vulnerable among us, children, have a safe place to live and a safe place to be. So I was fortunate enough to be at the onset of that around the year 2000. And quite frankly, at that time, I really still, it was a job for me. I enjoyed the work, and I don't mean to diminish that, but I never really understood at that time why I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a day, it was about 20 years ago, that it all really changed for me. I was standing inside one of the social work offices, like, of course, I had done for many years. And a young mother walked in, and she was holding the hand of her two-year-old child. And she went into the lobby. She let go of the child's hand, and she turned around and walked away.
Wow.
And as good social workers do, one of my coworkers swept up the child and handed him to me, and then went off after the mother to quickly try if she could figure out what was going on. And as I held that child, he began to cry as if he knew what was happening.
Hmm.
And as I looked at him and tried to comfort him, all I could picture was my own daughter, who was about 2 years old at the time. And it was like a flash. What would her life be like if I wasn't in it?
Mm-hmm.
What would it mean if I wasn't there to protect her? And at that moment, the work really changed for me. It became a passion. It became something that really I could never imagine peeling away from my life and who I am. And the journey became a little different for me after that day. And so this is all I'll ever do. And I love the work. I'm very passionate about the need for us to not only protect our children, but to provide them a pathway towards growth and health and happiness. And I've had the fortune of being at Embrace Families as the CEO now for over 16 years. I came to the agency really at her infancy, when Embrace mm-hmm. Families was very small and just beginning. And we've had a remarkable journey over that 16 years, growing and developing into one of the most successful and innovative foster care agencies in the country. And I really hope that's just the beginning. And a big part of our success has been that reconnection to community. It has been an engagement of our faith partners and brothers and sisters to really come into the lives of our kids and provide them a pathway different than what their past experience has allowed.
You know, you're doing such a good work. And this thing about foster care is something that we've covered before with a couple of different couples that we've interviewed on this. And I'm wondering, since you have been through these changes and you've seen it, and by the way, with that, you're talking about how you got into it, it being just a job in the beginning. A good friend of mine has a phrase that he often uses, where he says, "I stumbled into the will of God." I think that is a good way to describe what has happened with you. You may not have thought that you were doing that, but boy, by just being there, you find and you look backwards and you realize that God was dealing with you and guiding your steps. And now you're there for an entirely different motivation than what you began. But, you know, when you've seen these changes, you mentioned HRS, and as a pastor in the 80s in this area, I remember there were a lot of people who had notions about the government's involvement with children. And it was more than not a kind of a fearful thing, almost like a Big Brother agency that people talked about. And I know that that would not be representative of a lot of the people that worked in child protection back then. But the truth of it is that when a child is needing protection, they need it from whatever source they can get it. And gratefully, there is now an emerging organization such as what you've been leading that is going to help make that in the best possible scenario. Because what you would deal with when you're talking about having to pull a family, or to see a child be left behind, like what that experience that you had, that's one of the most gut-wrenching things that one could ever go through, I'm sure.
It is difficult work to do. But as we all know, some of the deepest meanings you will ever find in life come from those challenges. And so I love your phrase or your friend's phrase, and I will admit that I will steal it.
It is
a great description, and made me smile as you were saying it. When I learned what it all really meant, you had two choices. You would run away from the reality that you face, or you would run into that fire. And I have said to people over the years, I have probably seen and carried more very small caskets than anybody should in their lifetime.
Oh my.
And yet at the same time, I have found hope and inspiration in the perseverance and success of children that have grown and developed. You've provided them a path and an opportunity, and they have thrived. They have flourished in a way that you could never imagine that would be possible. And you know, a lot of us in America might find role models or people they aspire to be, and they find those people on television. They find them maybe on a court or a field. I don't. I find that inspiration in the young people that have overcome challenges and paths that most of us could never imagine enduring, and yet they have thrived.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are my heroes. I can think of one young man right off the top of my head who suffered a childhood that most of us could never picture. And yet he not only has found a way to succeed, he has found a way to develop and to be happy. He now serves his community. He's in law enforcement. And to watch him grow and develop is an inspiration, and it's a motivation to continue to provide those opportunities for today and tomorrow's children. If we give them the path, they will take it.
Mm-hmm.
But all of us should be offended at the idea that a child never has that chance, mm-hmm. never has that opportunity. And we can make a difference in that life. We can change that trajectory, and our own lives become enriched along the way.
What are the warning signs that you found for, let's say, a friend who maybe is observing a family that seems to be at least a potential for some problems like that? What are the warning signs, besides the obvious ones of bruises and things like that, but what are the other signs that you found are helpful to look for?
Well, I think the most important thing for people to understand is that you don't have to be an expert in this field. If it feels bad in your gut, you're probably right.
Mm.
And if you're unsure, make the call. And then a professional will come in and assess that situation. This is not a child protection system that is about rushing in and grabbing children out of homes. That's just not the way it works. More times than not, it's about helping a family through a crisis. And so if your gut feels funny, you're probably correct. Now, the most tangible thing that I ask people to look for, again, beyond the obvious that you've mentioned, obvious signs of strange bruises or injuries, is change in behavior. And so if you are maybe a pastor or a Sunday school teacher or a coach, you know how the children that you are connected to typically act. And when you see a real turn in that behavior, you should ask about it. A child that is typically really energetic and is out there kind of the life of the party, and suddenly they're quiet and solace and in the corner. Now, maybe it's because it's something perfectly normal in the lives of all of us. Maybe a family member is sick or dying. But as a caring adult, ask the question, how are you doing today? You don't seem like yourself. And when those answers don't really seem to add up, when they give you a funny feeling in your stomach, you should let professionals come in and help that family through. And we love that work. We embrace that work. And way more of the families that we work with at Embrace Families stay together than are ever forced to be apart. Removing a child from a home is a traumatic event, and it should be done only as a last resort when there all other options to help that family and to protect that child have been exhausted. And so I think some of those old legacies of HRS, that sort of fear of big government, we need to kind of get past and recognize that sometimes families need help. And if they need help, we want to help them. But sometimes children need protecting.
You know,
and we will do that as well.
That's an awesome thing. And even your name, it just carries with it that implication that you're embracing that family. You're loving that family. You want the best for that family. And I think that is the difference in people's concepts about big government. And again, going back, to tell you the truth, Glenn, even as a pastor, there were a number of times that I had the opportunity to work directly with the agents, the counselors who were part of HRS. I can't think of a time that those people working with HRS weren't in the same kind of position that you're talking about. They too were wanting exactly what you're describing. They're wanting a family to be healthy and whole, and of course that child to be protected. So I think that a lot of what people dealt with was indeed fear, and much of that fear was unfounded. But how much better is it to have an organization that even your name talks about warmth and hands out and wanting to help? That's a great difference right there.
Well, having lived both sides of that equation, everybody that I worked with in those early days at HRS and at DCF were great people. They were people trying to help. But there was always this kind of element that the system itself, the structure, was working against your efforts. Mm-hmm. Like you were always swimming into the current. And candidly, since we have moved to this community-based model and I have been a part of Embrace Families, it's like being free, right? It's like suddenly the current should flow with you, and the opportunity to help children is a part of the daily discussion. It's a part of the system.
It is indeed, and we'll be back with Glenn Castle in just a moment here on Afternoons with Mike. You are in tune to The Shepherd.
You've had this feeling that there has to be more to work than just work. You have a job, but what you really long for is a career, one that makes you feel like you're actually making a difference in the world. At Palm Beach Atlantic University, they understand that your career journey is unique. PBA's Orlando campus offers respected programs with personalized instruction from a Christian worldview that empowers you to realize your goals and career opportunities on your terms. Start your new journey today with Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando at pba.edu. That's pba.edu. Your degree, your way. pba.edu.
On the line today with Glenn Castle as we are highlighting child abuse prevention. Glenn, tell us a little bit about your organization, Embrace Families.
I frequently tell people inside my agency, in fact, every person that comes to work at Embrace Families, I speak to individually, and I tell them always the same philosophy. This organization works with an organizational chart that is upside down. And at the top of the organization are the children we serve. The
right.
Next rung are the families and caregivers around our children that day in and day out are taking care of them. Then the next ring are the social workers that go out there every day. And they carry a pencil where most people carry a gun. And they work day in and day out tirelessly to help families and help children. All of the rest of us are below them on the organizational chart. And I view myself at the very bottom. And the only role any of us have is to support anybody above. How do I help support the field? How do I help support the social workers? How do I help support families and ultimately children? And so obviously we don't hit that 100% every day in every activity, but as an agency, our philosophy is to push that effort towards our children. And when there's a policy or an issue or a particular situation that becomes an impediment to that success, I want to know about it, because mm-hmm. that's not who we want to be. I would never want a policy to stand in the way of doing what's right for a child. I want the staff and the families around our children empowered to do what's right for them. And then we'll deal with the policy change or difference or whatever. But it's never about the rules. It's about the mission. And it's about ensuring our kids have an opportunity. And amazing things have happened over the last 15 or so years. The number of kids in foster care has come down. The number of kids that stay a long time in foster care is way down. And one of the most incredible statistics that I'm so proud of in the accomplishments of our agency, when we started, there were over 300 children in Central Florida who were clear to be adopted. They were ready to be adopted, but there was no family matched for them.
Mm-hmm.
Over 300 children. And as of Monday of this week, we have 32.
My goodness, that is a fraction for sure. A tenth of that.
Now, I will tell my staff, that is an amazing accomplishment, and we should all feel proud, unless you're one of the 32 children that don't have a match.
Yeah.
And so it's incredible, and it feels really good to be a part of it. But that's 32 children that need our help. 32 children who need a connection to a family, not just through their childhood, for the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm.
One of the greatest experiences I ever had, I was at a courtroom when a 17-year-old was being adopted. And the judge asked her, why are you going through the adoption? You're 17. You'll be an adult before you know it. And this wonderful young lady said, I'd really like somebody that my children can call grandma and grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a great reflection of how our lives really work. Parenting is not just about childhood. It's about lifetime connections and support. And it changes shape over the years. But is it less important for your children to run and jump on grandma's lap? Of mm-hmm. course not. And so it has been a remarkable transformation of the foster care system over the last 15 years, but we're far from done. There's a lot more work ahead.
Glenn, we've talked about the importance of having options, if you will, for these kids who are in trouble, and no one wants to see a child have to be taken away. And sometimes it's like the lady who left the child with you. It's a voluntary thing by a parent. In more severe cases, it does involve a court saying basically and declaring that parent would be not able, not a fit parent, which is such a sad thing to think that that happens, but it does happen. And in those moments, having the option of a foster parent is such a helpful thing. Talk, if you will, tell us a little bit about what some of our listeners who are hearing this and might already be, let's say, being dealt with in their own hearts about wanting to serve in this area, but really fearful or maybe not having the right answers to know whether they should be doing that or not. What should people consider in order to become a foster parent?
Well, foster families are angels amongst us. They are some of the most remarkable people that you will ever be around. When I meet a foster family for the first time, I frequently say to them, you're already one of my favorite people, and I just met you, because you're just such big heart, true, true saints, and I just love all of our foster families so much. The thing that is amazing, I think, about them is they're just regular people. And in fact, just yesterday, I was talking at length with one of our foster families who was struggling with a particular case. It is hard work. It is emotional work, but it is rewarding work. And she was struggling a little bit. And so she and I were just talking about that. She and her husband are a wonderful young couple in their 30s and stepped forward to be a foster family. They're nothing amazing except that they're amazing. And one of the things that she said to me, which I hear frequently from our foster families, is, you know, God told us to do this, so we raised our hand and said we would. And a couple of times we wondered, why did you ask us to do this? but we'll keep going. And we love the children that we have. And the other thing that she mentioned that, really touched me is she said to watch the three-year-old that's in her home flourish every day that he is there. And the reality that when you bring a child into that loving environment, into that safe place, how their trajectory can change and the impact that you can have on kids. And so I always try to encourage families that have thought about fostering or considered it, take the risk and let's talk. So we have at Embrace Families an orientation and introduction process that can help make the decision of, is this right for your family? Is this a good fit for you and for your home? And we can take that journey together. I think the big risk is picking up that phone or clicking on that computer for the first time, because it can be a little intimidating, but there is lots of opportunity to really assess whether or not fostering is a good fit. But boy, it is, I have heard hundreds and hundreds of foster parents tell me how much their life has changed and been enriched by having our children in their homes. And the things that they never realized they would receive. You know, we got into this because we thought we would help children. And while we did that, I never realized how much I would change and how much they could teach me. And that really has been something special for me over a lot of years.
That sounds just exactly what has happened to you as you've got involved in this. You would never have dreamed that God would have grabbed your heart and given you the passion and the vision that you have for what you're doing. And that same thing does indeed happen to a lot of families who begin this. Like you said, I like the way you've expressed that. It's a risk in the beginning. Maybe there's a lot of things that they don't understand, but once they are there, they change. They are now growing into the concept. And in many cases, I know at least in a couple of people we know that were foster parents, they ended up having a child that would go into their care that would become not only one that they would care for, but one that they would indeed begin to love. And ultimately, they adopted that child. And we've got two dear friends who did that very thing. And those children that were adopted and brought in, brought out of a bad situation into a wonderful situation, are now members of those families, and they are thriving.
And that is, of course, very common. It, some of our most frequent adoptions are through a family that has first fostered that child. And, of course, from a lens of a child protection system, that's the best case scenario for us. So the parents are not able or unfit or are dangerous in some way. A child comes into a foster family and then never leaves that home. Mm-hmm. And so we would like first placement, only placement. Now, of course, sometimes that doesn't happen. And if the family is able to work through the crisis, the foster parents have to understand that that child will go back home. And very many of our foster families really fall in love with that success. While it is emotionally difficult for you to sort of watch that happen, many of our foster families end up longtime supports to the biological family. Maybe they serve as an aunt and uncle or a grandma and grandpa. And I can think of countless examples where they have stayed in the life of a child that has returned to the biological family and been a support to that child through the rest of their childhood and beyond, even though their stay in their home may have been, you know, just a few months.
What an honorable thing you are doing, sir. I commend you, I respect you, and I thank you for serving for 30-some-odd years. You know, you'd be one that I'd like to ask this question. The year that we've come through, the year of COVID, 2020, and all of the difficulties that it brought, did you see any uptick or concerning things that might have changed the environment for your work during this time?
Well, like all of us, we've had to adjust. And it has been challenging, just as it has been for so many of us. Social work, of course, is an interpersonal thing. It is interacting with other humans. And so the pandemic creates some very significant challenges. Our staff have been amazing. Our provider partners that we work with have been incredible, where they have forged ahead to continue to do the protection and oversight work despite the challenges and risks that the pandemic presented. But the biggest problem in the child protection system through the pandemic has been that the most skilled eyes and ears have been disrupted. And so the early identification of child abuse is most frequently educators and healthcare. Now, that makes sense, right? Our teachers are with our children day in and day out. They get to know children very well. They recognize those signs and symptoms when they see them happening real time each day in and day out. Well, of course, education's been heavily disrupted.
Yes.
In the pandemic. And then the second is healthcare, doctors and nurses and healthcare professionals that see our children and recognize things that aren't right. Well, healthcare has been thrown for a loop.
And you can't tell as well. You can't tell as quickly on a televisit as what you could see if you're seeing that child in person.
So we've actually seen a decrease in calls, a decrease in the investigations of abuse, because those most frequent callers, educators and healthcare, have seen their systems disrupted as well. And so as an advocate for children, that's very concerning to me. And so all of us maybe have a little bit more of an obligation to keep our eyes and ears open, because that safety net where, you know, they still will go to school, they still will go to a doctor, and it is likely that something will be identified, those systems have been disrupted. And so each of us have a little bit more of an obligation to step in and ensure that children are safe and that there is an opportunity for these problems or crises to be identified, especially at a time when the pandemic has so greatly strained our families and people's regular lives have been disrupted. This is a time where children are more vulnerable, and all of us have a little bit more of an obligation to be sure that they're safe.
What a great calling you are finding yourself in today, and thank you for your service.
Thank you so much for having me. God bless.
Next up on my program today, as we focus on child abuse prevention, Joy Chuba is on the line as well. Joy Chuba, who is the executive director of the Children's Advocacy Center in Osceola. Joy, welcome to my program today.
Thank you so much for having me, Mike.
Well, it's a wonderful thing that you guys are doing. Give us a little bit of background on you. Are you from the Central Florida area originally?
No, actually, I grew up just outside of Boston, in Massachusetts, and moved to Florida to come to college. And I really wasn't sure when I got to into college what I wanted to do with my career. And when I graduated, I had an opportunity to work at a child abuse shelter. So it was a residential home where children who'd been removed could go for a short-term placement before moving on to a foster home or another placement. And it was there that I found a passion and interest in working with children and helping them heal following abuse. I had grown up in Massachusetts. My parents modeled a lot of charitable acts, were always involved in community initiatives. And so I knew I wanted to give back, but after I started working at the shelter, I found that that was my passion. And I actually have been in the field of child advocacy now, really since 1995. So a lot of years I've devoted my career to helping children and families heal in the aftermath of abuse.
It's a wonderful thing that you're doing, and it is more needed, I believe, in this day and time than ever before. What would be the early, I guess, conviction points for you when you realized that this is what you wanted to pour yourself into? What would those be?
So I think that, you know, the first thing is I was, as a recent graduate from school, I wasn't really prepared. I didn't have the training that I should have had related to looking at for signs and symptoms of child abuse. And honestly, for me, it was a moment of it was a defining moment in my life, because I was angry that I hadn't been prepared to adequately identify potential signs of abuse, and I wouldn't have known how to report it. So I got educated, and then I started searching for other positions that would give me more opportunity to learn and grow. And that really was the, you know, the critical point in my early career where I said, you know, children need all of the adults around them to be educated and to know what to do, and not just to detect child abuse and neglect and report it and protect children, but help them heal and help them lead, you know, a healthy, happy life. And, you know, what we know right now about childhood trauma is that among the general population, it's incredibly common. So it's something that we as a community need to come together on. And what better time than April when we are celebrating Child Abuse Prevention Month to talk about it and to help adults, you know, raise our children and to be the healthiest and happiest that they can be.
And what a wonderful goal that is. I'll be back in a moment with one more segment with Joy. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike.
Are you looking to make a fresh career start? As Florida's top Christian college, Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando knows your faith is important to you, and it should be to your school as well. PBA Orlando offers a faith-based experience unlike any other. Whether it's a degree in leadership ministry or counseling, PBA combines biblical concepts from exceptional professors who bring years of real-world experience as leaders in their fields. Call them today at 844-PBA-ORLANDO. That's 844-PBA-ORLANDO. Education for your soul as well as your mind.
Back on the program here, Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by Palm Beach Atlantic University, Orlando. On the line with me is Joy Chuba from the Children's Advocacy Center in Osceola. Are you seeing any uptick in the cases that you've had this past year as a result of the pandemic, the lockdowns, and just the tensions in our country?
Yeah, so it's really interesting because there's been a lot of coverage that when the children were not in school, the number of reports being made on the children was going down to the authorities. And that's no surprise, really, because children were not visible to people who would have identified and potentially reported abuse concerns. At the same time, our advocacy center has not seen a reduction in the number of child sexual abuse cases. We're on track to be the same as we were in 2019 and 2020. Unfortunately, we are seeing an increase in the severity of injuries. We are seeing an increase in emergent responses needed. And, you know, we have a lot of adults staying home now. And this is certainly a very stressful time for people, financial stressors and all of that. So unfortunately, because of some of the impact of the pandemic and the restrictions, we are concerned that we're not getting all of the reports in.
Do you feel that as a whole, America has grown along with the need in giving parents who are, let's say, prone to this kind of problem? Because certainly this is not every parent, this is not every family, but there are telltale signs I know you've learned to look for. Do you feel that we've kept up to pace on helping parents who are the ones that are obviously bringing about this abuse? Do you feel that there are adequate programs or help, or is the church needing to step up and do things in that way? What are your thoughts on that?
So that's an excellent question, really, because we can always do better. We always, as a community, do better by our kids. Child abuse and neglect really breeds in secrecy. So when we don't talk about it and when we don't bring it to the forefront of conversations as, you know, something important to talk about, then it just continues. So we have so many resources available for parents, for certainly for faith communities, for teachers, for, you know, daycares. We have a lot, and we know what works to help support families. So yes, everywhere we can spread the education. You know, child sexual abuse in particular is, you know, is one of those types of abuse that it's really difficult for people to talk about. And the problem, again, is when it breeds in secrecy, you know, and we need to talk about this type of crime, and we need to be comfortable talking to our kids about how to recognize signs of something concerning. There are lots of things that parents can do and caregivers can do. I was going to say one of the things that's just so critical to think about, and it reminded me of this when you mentioned, could, you know, the church step up? So yes, it's incredibly common that trauma happens, but at the same time, the number one predictor of how a child is going to do is if they have one supportive, caring adult in their life to buffer the impact of trauma. So that's something all of us can do, right? What an important role.
What are you looking for in a situation when you see, and I don't mean the agency itself, but what would be, let's say, a friend, a teacher, a doctor, what can they be looking for beyond the obvious bruises that would go along with child abuse? What do you see as being a real telltale sign that there might be a problem?
Yeah, so, excellent question. So just like you and I are different individuals, different personalities, we are going to respond to stress and traumatic events differently. And same thing with children. However, the number one indicator is that the child tells you they're being abused, right? So if they're able to tell you and they verbalize it, it's important to believe, report, and protect.
Mm-hmm.
The other signs, which, you know, are frequently identified after we find out abuse, you know, caregivers will say, you know what, I did notice that. You're really looking for changes in your child's behavior. If it's a young child, you might see a child who really cannot settle themselves emotionally. They're tantruming and they can't calm down. With an older child who's in, you know, grade school, you could see changes in their sleep patterns, in their eating patterns. You could see aggression. Really, you're looking for something, a sign that something's changed with your child's behavior. With our older kids, you know, unfortunately, we sometimes see children acting out, being aggressive, potentially cutting themselves, being, you know, showing signs of depression. So really looking for changes in behaviors, and then talk to the child about it, because certainly changes in behaviors doesn't necessarily mean trauma, but it could mean it's signaling something's wrong.
Mm. You know, we're living in that internet age right now where so many people are much more secluded to their phones, face down in their screen of their tablet, that kind of thing. And are you seeing the impact that technology and social media, has it had any bearing on how kids are relating with this problem or dealing with it in their own lives?
Yes. You know, it's interesting. The federal law enforcement has done some coverage of the fact that online predators are, you know, much more active because kids are on their phones more. Mm-hmm. They're at home. For a lot of families, they may be even struggling with, having adequate daycare or supervision of their kids just simply because they have to work to make ends meet. And we have kids, you know, who are entertained by their tablets or smartphones. So it's definitely an area that we want to continue to educate caregivers on. There are lots of resources available for folks. One of the best resources is your local sheriff's office. A lot of them have educational programs for caregivers, teaching them how to monitor and what to look for in terms of signs of concerning behavior on the online.
You mentioned the secrecy, and obviously this is something that does breed privately. It's not anything that people who are doing this are shouting from the rooftops, but from a child's perspective, when they are the victim of this, there's this added thing of shame that goes along with it. How has your agency found to be one of the better ways or an effective way of helping that child, however, whatever age they are, to come out of that and go ahead and step out and share with the person talking with them, the advocate, what's going on or what has happened?
Yeah, so it kind of goes back to the being, a supportive and believing adult for the child. And like you said, shame is one of the many common feelings that victims have. They feel that for some reason it might be their fault that they were, you know, targeted. So the truth of the matter is that sexual offenders will manipulate children and will manipulate families. And so educating families and children that it wasn't their fault, that they were victims of being manipulated, someone, you know, who made them trust them, you know, in a kind of a false manner. So as an advocate, really kind of meeting the child and family where they are, giving them, you know, support and reassurance, letting them know there's hope and there's healing, because the really good news is that we have a lot of science that tells us what the impact of trauma can be long term, and we know how to effectively treat that. And at our center, we do have trauma-focused therapy. So I explain to families usually, as you know, if they're reluctant for therapy or they think perhaps maybe they know a therapist that would be good, I explain to them that, you know, trauma is a specialty. So much like if you had a cancer diagnosis, you would go to a specialist. Same thing with trauma. And so there's lots of effective trauma treatment available for folks. So that's the really good news of hope and recovery.
Yeah, the kids need that kind of help. That's one of the beautiful things about being an advocate, is that if they can see through to all of the stuff that would be objecting to their hearts or to their minds of why I shouldn't talk, if they can get through that and find someone that is trustworthy and they can feel comfortable, that really opens up a whole world of hope, doesn't it?
It does. It really does.
Well, this is very exciting to get to talk to somebody that's on the front lines. What things would you say you're hoping for your agency in the future? What changes would you like to see, maybe even in our laws or about the way things are happening from a government standpoint, that would help you and your mission?
Well, I think for me, you know, my passion for helping children heal keeps me going every day, but I really would like to see a lot more resources going towards preventing abuse from ever happening. Once someone comes to our doors, there's already been a concern, at least, for abuse or neglect. So the more that we can support home visiting programs, education for caregivers, and help them have the tools within their own toolbox to be able to talk to their children about childhood sexual abuse and protection and what to look for and how to get help, that really would be the direction that we need to go in.
You know, there was a day, Joy, that the kind of things that you have to deal with day in and day out, they're almost like in that category of unspeakable, terrible things that people should never have to go through. And there would have been a day that would never have been depicted in movies or on TV shows. In today's world, it seems that those things are just there for the taking. And a lot of things that are maybe unmentionable are mentioned and shown in graphic detail. Are you seeing any change in movies or TV shows that would be a positive thing for this need, or is it going in the wrong direction?
Well, you know, I think it's an opportunity in many ways because it's visible, right? And we're not going to be able to control the, you know, the media releases of movies and things, but it's an opportunity to ask your children and to start a dialogue, because like you said, now it's out there, it's accessible. Let's talk about it. Talk to your children. It's an opportunity to start a conversation. What do you think about this? And actually, that's really the key to education for children and caregivers, is that communication piece, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I always say to people, you know, it's not one conversation. Maybe when I was younger, it was like one conversation. You sit down and your caregivers tell you, you know, this could happen. If someone touches you, tell someone. But it should be more of a conversation. You don't show children a fire drill once and never do it again. You don't teach them to look both ways before they cross the street just once. It's a repeated ongoing conversation, and it's going to evolve depending on the child's age, right? So as they grow up, it's going to look different. So these movies, these media outlets that show or depict abuse happening or, you know, suspected, is an opportunity to start more conversations with families.
If there's ever an advocate that a child needs to have, it is their parent. So sadly, the parent is the one that is actually the cause or the perpetrator in this kind of a scenario. Are you seeing any change in that statistic?
Yeah, so I mean, we're looking at about 90% of our offenders being someone close to or known to the offender, so a family member, a household member. The good news is that at our advocacy center, if the child is coming in for sexual abuse, 90% of the children that we see have someone in their life who didn't offend, who is supportive, who can lead the child in recovery. So that's the really good news, mm-hmm. is that most children do have someone within the family. But you're right, that typically, especially with sexual abuse, it is someone within the home or close to the family.
This is a wonderful work that you're doing down there. Give us, if you will, your website and how people can learn more about you.
Sure. Our website is www.osceolakids.com. And on the website, we have some resources for caregivers. So you folks can learn about some of the resources we have available. And they are always welcome to call the center at 407-742-1545.
That is Joy Chuba, and that's all of our time today. Thanks for being with me on Afternoons with Mike.
Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by Palm Beach Atlantic University, Orlando.